from deep inside your radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, Southern California is, I like to think, one of the capitals of irony in advertising, thanks to a very successful hamburger chain here, Fatburger, which a couple of years back introduced low-fat Fatburgers, which rates on the irony in advertising scale for me just beneath, remember, Aspergum contains no aspirin, which immediately made me wonder whether it contains any gum. This week, Southern California reclaims the crown, at least temporarily. A new radio station has gone on the air, Indy 103.1, your independent station, it calls itself, because it plays a different variety of pop music than most of the stations on the air. Independent 103.1 is owned by Clear Channel Communications, the company that owns more than 1,200 radio stations, the company that owns more radio stations in the country than anybody. But, you know, if you have that kind of power, you feel sort of independent, don't you? Hey, it's the run-up to Valentine's Day. It's a love thing. Hello, welcome to the show.
From your embrace, what I feel is nothing but the taste of you. I get buried in your mouth. I fall in, I don't care if I can't climb out. Look at the moon, but I see only you. I'm days away, I'm a man in a caravan by the sea, waving at the old folks, waving at me. Out, see the drop. Take a new step, will you follow or stop? I look back from the ocean beneath to your eyes. To your eyes.
On the horizon as I walk from your embrace, what I feel is nothing but the taste of you. I get buried in your mouth.
Are we in it together now?
From the edge of America, from the home of the homeless, I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this pre-Valentine's Day edition of the show. Yeah, we take it real seriously here because, of course, It's it wasn't invented by the greeting card companies or anything. Now, of course, the society has become so ironic that there are commercials put on by the gift, the Valentine's Day gift industry, making fun of guys for, you know, their poor plight and thinking that they have to, that they can possibly slide out of getting a gift for the gal, and making fun of the fact that it's all, the guys think that it's all a crock. So it's ironic, and yet they're still moving units, and that's really the best of both worlds. Anyway, ladies and gentlemen, right here at the top of the show, because there's no other place for it, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast, the Apologies of the Week. Where better to start?
MTV, CBS, the NFL had no knowledge of this whatsoever. And unfortunately, the whole thing went wrong in the end. I am really sorry.
Who would that be? Hands? No, it's not Hands. It's Janet Jackson, of course. Joining the parade of apologizers for last Sunday's Super Bowl halftime show, which also included CBS, the NFL, the NBA, just in case anybody thought they were playing basketball instead of football at the game, and MTV's website, or webmaster. The website, which immediately following the Jackson performance, featured prominently an item headlined, Janet Gets Nasty, bragging that jaws across the country hit the carpet at exactly the same time. You know what we're talking about. Janet Jackson, Justin Timberlake, and a kinky finale that rocked the Super Bowl to its core, said MTV's website. It included this sentence, fans of Janet Jackson and her pasties were definitely in the right place, said head of MTV Judy McGrath. I'm sorry I was not on top of the website at the time. I am now responsible for five networks. That's her reward for banning a Spinal Tap video in 1992 on the grounds that it was sexist. Oh yeah, it'll all be in my book. But we've got more apologies. Many, many bigger fish by far to fry. That was the apology, that was the set of apologies that everybody in this country was talking about. Here's the one that so many fewer people in this country were talking about. Pakistan's top nuclear scientist, Abdul Qadir Khan, appeared on Pakistani state television last week to confess and apologize for leaking nuclear secrets to other countries, while absolving his government of any responsibility. It is with the deepest sense of sorrow, anguish, and regret that I have chosen to appear before you in order to atone for some of the anguish and pain that have been suffered by the people of Pakistan on account of the extremely unfortunate events of the last 2 months, he said. I'm aware of the vital criticality of Pakistan's nuclear program to our national security and the national pride and emotions which it generates in your hearts. Yeah, nukes are all about feelings, baby. I'm also conscious that any untoward event, incident, or threat to this national security draws the greatest concern in the nation's psyche. It is in this context that the recent international events and their fallout on Pakistan have traumatized the nation. This isn't Bill Clinton. This is the father of the Pakistan nuclear bomb. I have much to answer for. The recent investigation was ordered by the government of Pakistan consequent to the disturbing disclosures and evidence by some countries to international agencies relating to alleged proliferation activities by certain Pakistanis and foreigners over the last two decades. The investigation, I'm still quoting, the investigation has established that many of the reported activities did occur, and these were inevitably initiated at my behest. In my interviews with the concerned government officials, I was confronted with the evidence. I voluntarily admitted that much of it is true and accurate. My dear brothers and sisters, I have chosen to appear before you to offer my deepest regrets and unqualified apologies to a traumatized nation. I take full responsibility for my actions and ask your pardon. And you know what? He got it. He got it from the president of the country. That's right. President Musharraf pardoned him. Because all he did was sell nuclear secrets to Iran, Libya, and North Korea. We wouldn't attack a guy like, we wouldn't attack a country like that, would we? When it was just one guy? He according to some reports, ensured the pardon by sending to his daughter, who lives in Iraq, evidence that Pakistan's military was aware of the proliferation. Kind of an insurance policy, according to the Washington Post. Musharraf, the president of Pakistan, says, I give him pardon. He talks English, but he says, I give him pardon. Khan, however, has implicated President Musharraf and three of his predecessor army chiefs in the nuclear transgressions he's been accused of, according to the Times of India. If you want to know something about Pakistan, ask the Times of India. Khan has reportedly told investigators that Musharraf and his predecessors were among those who knew and approved of the dealings with North Korea and Iran. But hey, they're our friends. More apologies. The U.S. Army has apologized for threatening to prosecute an open government advocacy group after it republished a document copied from a military website. An official with the U.S. Army Services and Operations Agency, that's not vague enough, accused the Federation of American Scientists of publishing a secret government document about acquiring military hardware before backing down a few hours later. In a telephone conversation with CNET, an internet news agency, a spokesman, Thomas Harmon, chief of the Army's Electronic Library Branch, acknowledged the error. I'm sending an apology right now for how that went down. We finally got a legal clarification that I think will keep me and other people like me from reacting the way we did on security issues. Or people who just like him. Six contestants on a TV dating show tricked into flirting with a woman who turned out to be a transsexual have received payments and an apology after they threatened to sue. This is in Britain. The six men spent 3 weeks competing to kiss and cuddle Miriam, only discovering that she was really a man at the end of the filming when she picked the winner and lifted her skirt to reveal that she had not yet had a surgical sex change. The contestants included a Royal Marine commando, a ski instructor, and a former lifeguard. One was said to be so furious that he punched the show's producer when he found out. The men launched legal action against the producers of the program, Brighter Pictures. The show is called There's Something About Miriam. And they also sued the satellite channel Sky One, owned by Rupert Murdoch. Hey, he usually does classy stuff. They demanded the show be shelved, claiming conspiracy to commit a sexual assault. The men have agreed to drop their threat of court action. The show will be broadcast after the out-of-court settlement. The men are satisfied with the apology and pleased that matters have been resolved. It was just conceived as a dating show with a twist, said a spokesperson. Georgia State School Superintendent Kathy Cox has reversed a previous decision to remove the word evolution from Georgia's school science curriculum. I made the decision to remove the word evolution from the draft of the proposed biology curriculum in an effort to avoid controversy. I'm here to tell you I misjudged the situation, and I want to apologize for that. And author Michael Pellegrino, formerly known by the pseudonym Michael Gambino, reached a settlement this week with Simon & Schuster over his first novel, The Honored Society. When his novel was released in 2001 under the pseudonym Michael Gambino, he swiftly caught the interest of Hollywood and the literary world. I'm truly sorry for going along with a previous publicity campaign to mislead the public into thinking I was the actual grandson of Carlo Gambino, said Michael Pellegrino. I also send a humble apology directly to the entire Gambino family for using their family name. That's right. Guy profited on the bad name of others. Apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen. Any wonder that it's a copyrighted feature?
In the silence born. to drown in illusions lie. We are saved if the world shines, and we will find our way back to this simple kiss. Always a place.
It's a love thing, ladies and gentlemen, and now news from inside and outside the bubble. The bubble is fixing to burst, but in the meantime, retired General Wesley Clark's only son has blasted, who does he blame for his dad's less than stellar performance in the primary so far? That's right. He blames the media. Interesting. Novel. Guess, by the way, what Wesley Clark Jr., 34-year-old son of the retired general, what he does for a living. He's a screenwriter. Yeah, I know, aren't we all? In a meeting with reporters while his father called voters, said, "I'd like to see him win in Oklahoma," which he did. "It's a really disillusioning experience," he went on. "You go out and see the way politics really works," says Wesley Clark Jr., the screenwriter. "It is a dirty business filled with a lot of people pretending to be a lot of things that they are not." 34-year-old screenwriter discovering this, ladies and gentlemen, about the world of politics. But, you know, everybody at their own pace. Quote, "There was a lot of sneering and whispering going on by columnists and talking heads. It is all a horse race. No one is talking about the issues. It is a hell of a way to pick a president," said 34-year-old screenwriter Wesley Clark Jr. And now to news from really outside the bubble. Brian Jones, if you hear that name and think of the the long-deceased member of the Rolling Stones, you really are inside the bubble, and you've got to get outside. Brian Jones was, you know, last week on this broadcast, we talked about, I think we've talked about for the last couple of weeks, people who, contrary to David Kay, the head of the Iraqi survey group, who came back and said there are no weapons of mass destruction over there, but we were all wrong. Contrary to David Kay, some people weren't all wrong. Andrew Wilkie, who resigned from the Australian equivalent of the Defense Intelligence Agency, saying, hey, the government is inflating this really sparse and almost negligible intelligence into this fairy tale about weapons of mass destruction. He resigned last year in March, I believe. He wasn't wrong. Brian Jones, who is sort of the same kind of figure in the British intelligence service, he wasn't wrong. He resigned in March saying, hey, whoa, hey, whoa. His former boss at the Defense Intelligence Staff, DIS, Air Marshal Sir John Walker, has fully backed Brian Jones' protest about the Iraq dossier and said he is astounded that the views of so eminent an expert and his colleagues were ignored. He said Brian Jones should not have been given the old, quote, two-shoe shuffle, unquote. He said if Brian Jones and the staff had said they were unhappy about an aspect of intelligence, then I, when I was chief of defense intelligence, would have sat up and taken on board what they are saying. I'm astounded that instead of sounding alarm bells, their reservations appear to have been put aside. I'll tell you, ladies and gentlemen, nothing is more disturbing than the idea that it's just the country is in big, big, big trouble when Dennis Miller is caring more about politics than his hair. I just find that a very disturbing sign. That's a leading indicator. The British government has published a document, the government response to the Intelligence and Security Committee report on Iraqi weapons of mass destruction, makes this revelation. The intelligence services of Britain had already reported before the war began that Iraq's ballistic missiles had already probably been dismantled and that the presence of UN weapons inspectors in Iraq was making it difficult for that country to threaten anyone with weapons of mass destruction. So let's get the inspectors out. What do you... Oh, we did. The document added the Joint Intelligence Committee's assessment specifically pointed out Iraq's ability to use chemical and biological weapons might be constrained by the difficulty of producing more while UN inspectors were present, and that intelligence on the deployment of chemical and biological weapons was, quote, sparse. This led, oddly enough, to the British government saying in its famous dossier that Iraq was poised to use chemical and biological weapons 45 minutes after an order was given. Tony Blair said this week he didn't know that that meant just munitions, battlefield munitions, small bore little battlefield munitions. It didn't mean that they had missiles that could attack Cyprus or Saudi Arabia or Israel. He didn't know. His defense minister knew. His spin doctor knew. He didn't know. Forget what George W. Bush knew, because we used British intelligence to back up the 45-minute claim, which now has him behind me. Dennis Miller can explain that noise. Also, from outside the bubble, the British government admitted this week British intelligence officers knew before the war Saddam had not assembled his chemical weapons, whatever they were, whatever he had, and it was highly doubtful if he could deploy them. British intelligence knew that before the war. We weren't all wrong. The Joint Intelligence Committee had given warning last March that intelligence on the timing of when Iraq might use chemical and biological weapons was, quote, sparse. Apropos of the British government's claim that Iraq was able to deploy weapons of mass destruction within 45 minutes, whether they be battlefield munitions or something bigger. Nick Theros, the Washington representative of Iyad Alawi, who headed the Iraq National Accord in exile, said it was raw intelligence from a single source, part of a large amount of information passed on by the Iraqi National Accord to British intelligence that accounted for the 45-minute claim. He told a British newspaper, The Guardian, quote, we were passing it on in good faith. It was for the intelligence services to verify it. We were never saying, said Britain's Foreign Secretary Jack Straw, we were never saying that Saddam Hussein posed an imminent threat to the United Kingdom. Imminent threat is what everybody's bailing out of now. Grave, urgent. Yeah, they did say that. Imminent? Why would we say imminent? Because the serious and current threat to the world, and that was absolutely true, and I remain convinced it was, said Jack Straw, British Foreign Secretary. Not like Pakistan. That was, they weren't. Nick Theros, speaking for the Iraqi National Accord, said the information regarding the 45-minute deployment claim now seemed to be a crock of S-blank-blank-T. His quote, "Clearly we have not found WMD. He works with his father, a former U.S. ambassador, to promote the political affairs of Mr. Alawi, who is now a member of the Iraqi Governing Council in Baghdad." He said the Iraqi officer, who claims to have been the original source of the 45-minute intelligence, never saw the purported chemical weapon crates upon which his claim was based. The former spy, who now calls himself Lieutenant Colonel Al-Dabah, that's not his full name, is now said to be in hiding. They're all in hiding. That doesn't single him out. But here's here's again Air Marshal Sir John Walker, formerly of the Defense Intelligence Staff in Britain. "What we have subsequently discovered," he says, "is that the intelligence about the 45 minutes was hearsay. It did not come directly from a normally reliable source, but that source speaking to someone else. You would not get a conviction against a two-bit burglar based on that kind of evidence, let alone go to war." It's a love thing.
The shadows away, love walked right in and brought my sunniest day.
This is Le Show, and this was, I don't believe this has been reported anywhere else, and it may not even be reported here, but here's what I know. Last week, when the United States of America was treated to a view of Janet Jackson's right breast, such as it is now constituted, on the Super Bowl halftime show. People that I know very, very, very well, that's three verys, count them, were watching that same halftime show on the World Satellite Feed. Now, the World Satellite Feed is a live broadcast of the Super Bowl. It goes across the world. It basically is the same video as what you saw on CBS. Has different audio depending on what country it's going to. But they also have the ability to cut away from the CBS picture to take some other photo, so video. So, for example, if it's going to China, they'll shoot the Chinese commentators up in the booth and insert that. So these folks that I know really, 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 three reallys, ladies and gentlemen, as many reallys as there were verys a moment ago, very, really, very, really, very well, said they were watching the halftime show on the World Satellite Feed, and it did not include that final shot in which Janet Jackson's half of her breastworks were revealed. Now, this is live, and the shot didn't last that long on CBS. They cut away pretty fast, so you got to figure, well, it wasn't the director having great, the director of the World Feed having great reflexes. So he probably, and this is a surmise, of course, ladies and gentlemen, I have no information. If this was it, if I had information, this would be NPR. The director probably had been tipped off. Hey, you know, you better cut away at this moment from the network feed because otherwise the Super Bowl will never be broadcast in China ever again. Because they take a dim view of that, do the Chinese. They take a dim view of Rupert Murdoch when he was broadcasting BBC on his satellite, let alone Janet Jackson's chest. That would tell you, if it's true, pretty much all you need to know about that incident. And then you would have to wonder, what's next?
A big award show goes raunchy.
And another Jackson is involved. We've got the fireworks.
And we know who's been punked.
Got to be Extra Access tonight, the weekend edition, for the week after next, 2004.
Everybody, I'm Mike DeVere.
And I'm Pat Mungo. For years, the Producers' Choice Awards have been Hollywood's best-kept secret. But not anymore. After last night's live airing on the E2 cable network, the startling appearance by LaToya Jackson has got just about everybody talking, except the producers of the Producers' Choice Awards. Even executives at E2's sister network, E, were amazed.
Hey, look, the whole reason for an E2 is, you know, to have a place that's hotter and edgier than E. I mean, it's not easy, is it? A lot of real heavy envelope lifting going on there, but something was really very wrong about this.
This, in case you've been living in a cave, was LaToya Jackson's 22nd appearance at the end of the Producers' Choice Award show's opening credits, when she got friendlier with a donkey than anyone on TV since Mr. Ed. And once we stuck a microphone in their faces, literally everyone had an opinion.
I think it was shameful.
Senator John Kerry weighed in.
And I don't believe for a moment that the producers didn't know a donkey was coming on stage until the last minute. I mean, give me a break. And don't let the door hit you on your way out.
Schools across the country have canceled plans to use donkeys in next December's Christmas pageants. And Mike will have more reaction right after I stop talking.
Maybe the most tearful apology in the wake of the LaToya Jackson date with a donkey came from LaToya herself. Along with a video for her new single, she put a 2-minute videotaped apology on her website.
I never wanted to do anything except have fun with a farm animal. I mean, I never had a childhood either. And the donkey had such big, soulful eyes. But if anyone was really offended by this, I'm sorry. We tried to make it very ballet-like.
Also apologizing was Jeter Bailey, the animal's trainer.
I really literally had no idea what she was planning to do. I mean, I got the call at 4:30 the night of the show. And, as things turned out, unfortunately, I'd already fed the animal in question. But they said I just had to bring him over. And so what we had on live television was just a digestive malfunction on his part and, of course, on her.
The chairman of the board of the media giant that owns E2 apologized before a Senate committee.
Senators, this was 20 seconds out of a two-hour award show. Now, I would maintain that in today's television that only a 20-second mistake in a 120-minute live broadcast is a pretty good batting average. Nonetheless, to our affiliates, our advertisers, and to the American people, we offer our profoundest apologies. To the humane community, we offer a pre-bought pilot about sexy animal control officers. And to everyone, we offer a pledge that we're working on new delay technologies as we sit here. I mean, we're not developing them here, but we're just sitting here, but you know what I mean.
And both sides asked for a delay in the Michael Jackson trial until LaToya Gate cools down. If ever.
Person or persons unknown entered the premises of Animal Land USA and left the computers and other valuables, but appear to have made off with Chester, the donkey in question.
Authorities suspect that Chester might not have legs anymore, but this story sure does, and we're staying on it. What else are we going to do? Cover the war?
That's it for now. But Extra Access Tonight comes rolling back tomorrow with the results of our latest EAT poll.
We asked you, who you like better, Mike or me?
And the results will have one of us asking for a raise.
Till then, so long from Culver City.
Look, look at what you've done. You've hit and run my heart, and I just can't seem to think of saving myself. And I still don't understand why you'd be the man for me, but I can't seem to think of loving someone else. And so mysterious. Well, let's hear it for love. 'Cause I could be home in my bed and you'd be chasing airplanes. I could pretend to be dead and you'd be entertaining friends. You're like a hole in my head, but the world will never be the same without you. The world will never ever be the same. Hey. So look, look at what you've done. I'm overwhelmed and overcome, and I can't seem to make you give me any more of yourself. And look at what you did. You lit the sky, then you closed the lid, and now I'm like dog who's crawling on your floor. And it's so mysterious. Well, let's hear it for love. 'Cause I could be home in my bed and you'd be chasing airplanes. I could pretend to be dead and you'd be entertaining friends. You're like places where will you find love? There's no planet, it's a man and a woman, it's heaven and it's human, and there's nothing better going. If it's the taste of day.
had sex with a stranger. It's the last man on earth. It's a dog in a manger. So let's hear it. Let's hear it.
Ladies and gentlemen, as you know, President Bush, this week, or last week, I forget which week it is, appointed a special commission to investigate the intelligence that led up to the Iraq War, and he gave it a deadline of next March. Tony Blair has appointed a commission to investigate intelligence in the run-up to Iraq, and he gave it a deadline of this coming summer. Tony Blair isn't running for election this year in November. President Bush on Meet the Press this past weekend explained that he gave the Iraq Intelligence Commission until March, next March, because he doesn't want to rush it. 2 days after he agreed to stop insisting that the independent commission investigating 9/11 not have a 60-day extension of its deadline to report. You see what I'm saying? They were rushing the 9/11 Commission to report quickly, and not rushing the Intelligence Commission. Different situations require different. George Tenet this week, I got to stop doing shows on the weekend. Testified. No, he gave a speech defending the intelligence community in preparation. In fixing for the commission. But last summer, dig this. George Tenet testified before the Senate Intelligence Committee. He was at that time explaining why that 45-minute claim made it into the State of the Union address. Remember that? He said, this is George Tenet, head of the CIA, last summer. He said an ad hoc committee called the Office of Special Plans, headed by Paul Wolfowitz and Assistant Defense Secretary Douglas Feith, rewrote the intelligence information on Iraq that the CIA gathered and gave it to White House officials to help George Bush build a case for war. Now, because the Special Independent Commission on Intelligence doesn't have a mandate to deal with what happens to intelligence after it leaves the CIA, that fact will remain in last summer is where it's going to live. Ladies and gentlemen, now the presidential election campaign hurtles onward. Howard Dean has announced it's Wisconsin or bust. And people are entitled, I guess, at this point to ask, well, you know, if he wasted $40 million, how would he have done with a bigger budget? But, you know, hey, listen, people in Hollywood waste $40 million all the time. We understand. And somebody actually already has pulled out of the race in the wake of the seven primaries last Tuesday, in which he really didn't have a very good showing. Former vice presidential candidate Joe Lieberman is gone from the race.
I feel good. I knew that I would. I feel good. I knew that I would now. So good.
Hello?
Al? Joe.
Joe. Joe, Joe, Joe. How are you?
Well, I'm out of the race, so that's a geschnacka feeling.
The what?
I feel good. So good. So good.
That's great, Joe.
Uh-huh.
You know, I remember the palpable sense of relief I felt after the Supreme Court decided the 2000 race.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, sure, I was robbed and everything, but still, there was that little part of me that said, whew.
Sure, sure. Hey, somebody on the press bus said it's a marathon and a contact sport rolled into one. Pretty good, not that I leave with a lot of good feelings about the press bus.
Now, Joe, don't let it make you bitter. You've got so much Senate service left in you. You've got a very good shot at becoming our Bob Dole. You know, loses presidential race, returns to the Senate, becomes a lion under the dome.
I appreciate that, Al. Yeah. I really do. And you know, there were some incredibly interesting moments along the way. Just last week in Tulsa, I spent 2 hours at the boat show, and it felt like I shook the hand of every fisherman south of Omaha.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I saw some of that on C-SPAN. My God, those are wonderful people.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, Joe, within the confines of your Senate service, which means, yeah, you've got to be in D.C. at most 3 days a week,
mm-hmm.
get out of public view for a little while. You know, do some reading. Regather yourself. Maybe grow a beard.
No, thanks, Al. My beard itches like crazy. I mean, Hadassah's all right with it, but
Tipper sends her best to Hadassah.
Oh, thank
but
you.
Look, what I'm saying is this is a great opportunity to get in touch with your inner Joe Lieberman. He's in there.
Oh, look, I know he is. I like him. We stay in touch. But, Al, I have to say I appreciate you taking my call this time.
Joe, I am so sorry about it. Well, you're talking about when I endorsed Governor Dean. You know,
well,
I feel so bad about that. My BlackBerry had a meltdown. We couldn't sync it back up to the address book in my laptop before the story leaked. And
mm-hmm.
and then it just seemed like, hey, you know, what can you say, Department?
No, I know. I guess I kind of felt that by now someone in your organization might know my number by heart, but...
Yeah, well, of course, Chris Lehane did, but he's long gone.
I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm very grateful for you choosing me in 2000. Otherwise, I wouldn't have even thought about running until 2008.
Mm.
But it just seemed like, I don't know, a very public slap in the face at a time when I really thought our message of toughness on national security, fiscal responsibility at home with a social conscience and a values agenda was getting through.
Joe?
Hmm?
It was too long a message. With way too many prepositions. It didn't get through to me, and I'm not exactly Mr. Cut to the Chase.
Well.
And hey, as for a slap in the face, just ask Governor Dean how much help my endorsement has been. You should be thanking me. You know, the message that did get through, Joe, was you whining about being a victim, and that's not presidential.
Yeah, we'll see. We had research that said that played pretty well.
Well.
Okay, look, Al, you're probably right. Maybe these endorsements aren't worth the paper they're reported on, and maybe whoever wins the nomination is just buying a ticket to a 5-month shellacking by President Bush, and maybe this has all been a remarkable learning experience, and I'm going to try to convince myself that all of that is true.
Look, here's what I'm saying. Just give yourself the space to work up a couple of major speeches to give every once in a great while, you know, just to remind people you're still breathing
mm-hmm.
and thinking.
Yeah.
And something about the war, maybe. It may be too late, but my second speech about the war was in July, and it was long over by then. So,
Al, I just hope we can repair what I thought was a pretty strong friendship. You know, friendship is a big part of my values agenda. What President Bush proposed doing to support marriage, we were going to put forward the same sort of thing to support friendship. I was going to announce it in Michigan today at the Dearborn YMCA.
Uh-huh.
And I was going to make a dinner speech to the Detroit World Affairs Council.
Small dinner.
Late flight to Washington State. Breakfast appearance at the Seattle listen to me.
You're still on the wheel.
Well, it's hard to let go.
Yeah, you know what'll help? Be sure to read the newspapers every day.
Why? I never paid attention to what they said about me. They had us written off weeks ago, and we lasted straight through till February.
I know, but after a while, you'll notice that there's nothing for you to not pay attention to, and that just lifts the burden right off of you.
Okay, Al. Well, look, good luck getting that BlackBerry synced up.
Huh? Oh, right, yeah, it's a bitch not having that working.
Mm-hmm.
Joe, listen, you take care, and if you need anything, make sure you get it, because you have earned it, my friend.
Thank you, Al. God bless.
You see a pair of laughing eyes, and suddenly you're sighing sighs. You're thinking nothing's wrong, you string along, boy, then snap. Those eyes, those sighs, they're part of the tender trap. You're hand in hand beneath the tree, and soon there's music in the breeze. You're acting kind of smart until your heart just goes whap. Those trees, that breeze, they're part of the tender trap. Some starry night, when her kisses make you tingle, she'll hold you tight, and you'll hate yourself for being single. And all at once it seems so nice, the folks are throwing shoes and rice. You hurry to a spot that's just a dot on the map. You're hooked, you're cooked, you're caught in the tender trap. Some starry night, when her kisses make you tingle, she'll hold you tight, and you'll hate yourself for being single. And all at once it seems so nice, the folks are throwing shoes and rice. You hurry to a spot that's just a dot on the map. And then you wonder how it all came about. It's too late now, there's no getting out. You fell in love, and love is the tender trap.
Gentlemen, there are rumors that this broadcast puts out and a very occasional email newsletter, and you're invited to
Well, you're not invited. You're advised that you can subscribe by sending an email to subscribe-leblast, L-E-B-L-A-S-T, at luxmedia, L-U-X, media, dot com. And don't bug me if you don't get it very often, because I don't send it very often. You're welcome. Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes this edition of Le Show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations over NPR worldwide throughout Europe, over the USEN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ The Planet, 7.415 megahertz, and girdling the globe via the internet on your computer whenever you want it at two different locations, harryshearer.com and kcrw.com. And it would be just like us getting to see the right breast of Pakistan's father of the nuclear bomb if you'd agree to join with me then, would you? Alrighty, thank you very much. Email address for this broadcast is lemail, L-E-M-A-I-L, at interworld.net. Le Show Internet Services by Steve Mack. Le Show playlists usually available at the newly refurbished harryshearer.com. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless. Happy love thing, everybody.